Welcome to the HQ, where happiness lives. It's the key to grow and become better fathers. So turn up the volume and thanks for hanging out with us. Learn how to overcome your divorce.
What is up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the HQ. Today is March 19, 2018. My name is Rob. I'll be your host for the show. If this is your first time tuning in, guys, welcome. We usually do these kinds of things every Monday and Friday. Monday being our interviews, Fridays being our shorter rounds with me. And if you guys aren't part of the Facebook group yet, I don't know why there are hundreds of men in there right now going through all kinds of things, getting real-time advice, and just hanging out and being positive and shedding the light for each other. So come join the group. All the stuff is going on inside of there. Wednesdays, we usually do our live Facebook Q&As. And next Wednesday, we'll be doing a free webinar on how to overcome your divorce. So make sure you guys sign up for that. All the links will be inside the show notes as well as inside the group, guys. All right, so that's where all the fun stuff is happening. Make sure you guys go request your entry. And today, I have an awesome guest. She's an effective communication coach. She's an entrepreneur. And she also teaches people to step into their authentic, true voice. She was a classically trained opera singer. Gina Mo knows the importance of getting a message across in a way that truly, truly moves people. All of our communication is predicated on language, whether verbal or non-verbal. And yet we often find ourselves saying one thing with language that communicates something vastly different or stumbling to find the right words. Gina Mo has a deep passion for coaching people, clearly expressing their mission or story to attract and connect with their ideal clients and loved ones in a powerful and authentic way. I can't wait for you guys to listen to this interview. We had so much fun recording it, and there was a lot of great golden nuggets that Gina gives. She's such a great communicator, and we get a little bit vulnerable too as well. We get to know Gina personally, and I couldn't thank her enough for coming on the show. So without further ado, let's get to the interview, guys. What is up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the HQ. I have a very dear friend with me here today, and we have a great topic that we want to discuss. My friend Gina Mo. She is an effective communication coach, recently turned entrepreneur, but she used to be a classically trained opera singer, which was her foundation on how she got into this type of business. So I'm glad to have her on. We have a really, really great, important topic that we want to discuss. Gina Mo, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, and I'm glad we connected. Obviously, we connected through School of Greatness Academy with Lewis Howes, but it's been we've been on each other's radar for quite a long time. We just haven't really connected, so I'm glad we did. And I want to know more about your story. So let us know how you kind of got where you're at and whatever you feel comfortable sharing with us.
Sure. It's a twisting and turning story. It kind of is a long backstory, so I'll give you the shortest version I can. But basically, growing up, I always had an affinity for and a talent for singing. It was something I just always really enjoyed. You know, every kid has that one movie they watch over and over and over, and they sing along to. Mine was The Little Mermaid. And so I would be sitting there watching it 7 times a day, playing it over and over, singing along with the songs. And what was interesting is that I never wanted anybody to hear me. Of course, I'm not home alone, you know, I'm a little kid, but anytime anybody would come into the room, I would pause it and wait for them to leave so that I could continue. So even as a little kid, I knew I had this terrible, terrible performance anxiety. But as I got older, I wanted to cultivate that talent of singing, and I got formal voice lessons. I got involved in choir in school and things, and I really actually pursued it in my undergraduate. I went to a conservatory-like school called Westminster Choir College to pursue vocal performance and to be a performer. But when I graduated, I realized that, I mean, I hadn't gotten excited about doing auditions. I hadn't gotten excited about getting out there and pursuing this performance career because it's risky. You know, the starving artist lifestyle and that stereotype is real. And I'm somebody who genuinely likes her ducks in a row. You know, I like a game plan. I like security. So I struggled for a really long time of figuring out, okay, well, what do I want to do with this? Because I felt a significant guilt in wasting a talent and especially all those years of study and technique training. But I knew there was something more to it. So I wound up going to grad school for performing arts administration where I fell in love with marketing. And I thought, okay, great. So this is the way I get to serve the arts. I get to be around the thing that I love and then serve in a way that I feel like I have a really strong business acumen for. And then even going into that, I felt like there was still something missing. And I dove into, not long after that, I dove into some leadership training, actually the same leadership training and emotional intelligence training that Lewis Howes talks about doing with Chris Lee. I did those trainings and it opened up for me all of these internal conversations I was having about what I was doing with my life, why I was doing those things. And a lot of the reality was that I was pursuing arts administration because I felt guilty about leaving. But the reality was of why I was so drawn to singing in the first place, and as opposed to just having the talent, but being terrified to actually be on a stage or ever perform, had everything to do with me truly wanting to connect to information that was inside of me, feelings that were inside of me, emotions, opinions, thoughts that I did not feel comfortable sharing in a public venue. And so I used singing as a way to express that, but also hiding a little bit, because obviously I'm playing a character, you know, the song isn't my words, it's a song. But at the same time, being an opera singer, you breathe so deeply and your body is so involved in singing and performing, you can't help but be connected to your true emotional state with that. And so what I realized over through all of that intelligence training was that my singing was really a way for me to try and tap into this authentic version of myself and communicate it genuinely that I was just too afraid to do in everyday life. You know, I was the youngest kid growing up, and I often felt as though I wasn't heard or I wasn't listened to or respected, or even as an adult, sometimes I often feel that way, that, you know, well, you're just the baby in the family, you know, you're still learning. Well, I'm 32, like maybe I have some opinion of merit now, but that's really where that love and that expression came from for me. And I realized that I can take that knowledge, all of that knowledge from emotional intelligence, from my public speaking skills, from general language skills. I just love language and my marketing skills. All of it marries together to be this effective communication coaching that then I can help other people really hone into that authenticity for themselves and learn how to be vulnerable in a safe way that lets them feel heard and lets them feel like they're not bottling everything up and hiding who they are or putting on a mask of who they truly are. So that's the huge evolution to this point, which I feel like my singing was a very strange way to get started to go there, but that's where I've ended up now.
Love it. I'm just hearing all those transitions and all those little pivot moments, and it was just amazing how it all was gearing you up for what you're doing now. And like all these little things, I mean, even just going back to the singing part, I want to ask you, like, how long were you, training for, I guess, opera singing?
Yeah, I started getting voice lessons when I was 12 years old, because you're really not supposed to get lessons when you're younger than that. Your voice is still developing. Mm-hmm. And I went all the way through college and then even a few years past that. So it was over a decade worth of training, formal training.
Wow.
But like I said, even as a child, I loved to sing. I was always singing. I still sing in a church choir now. That's sort of my creative outlet. I love going to karaoke every once in a while and still just enjoying it for myself, but I just do it in less formal ways now.
That's amazing. And no, the reason why I ask is just because I know there's some dads listening on who have daughters or even sons who want to get into singing. So I was just like, wow, this is like, I didn't know that you had to be 12 in order to actually start practicing singing. So that's cool. Great tip. That's why anyways I asked. But transitioning back into, what made you switch over though? At what point were you like, okay, I need to switch from, being a classically trained opera singer to an effective communication coach? Was there like a specific something, like an event that happened to you, or was it just?
It was a series of events, but the very first one that really made me rethink being a performer full time, despite the performance anxiety that was already kind of making me hesitant. I had begun working at the college that I graduated from in their office of admission within a couple months of graduating. And because of that, I was eligible for tuition remission, which was, pretty cool. Great. I can get a graduate degree for free, basically. Like that would have been an amazing opportunity. But I still had to audition for the program. They can let me in and take my acceptance, but I still had to meet the requirements for the program. So I waited a year. I continued training with a voice teacher for a year to then audition for the graduate program of the place that I got my undergraduate degree from. and I didn't get in. And it was a enormous blow to my ego, especially since as an artist or a performer in general, there's no such thing as perfection. You know, you can do your best that day. You can do the best you can. You can be in great form. You could have really felt the moment, whatever you want to call it, in the flow, you know, but there's no such thing as perfection, particularly as a musician. It's just impossible. You can always do something a little better. So I went in there into that audition feeling like I truly did the best I could. And I still didn't get in. And it was a huge blow to my ego of, oh my God, if the place that trained me doesn't want me, who the hell will?
Yeah.
It was heartbreaking. And so I had to sit and really think about what am I doing? What am I pursuing? And in all honesty, I didn't want to do anything but perform. And yet it was the last thing that I was actively trying to pursue on the side. Like I said, I wasn't doing auditions. I wasn't exploring these other avenues that as a performer, you generally should be and should be excited about if you're going to be going down that line. So that was when I made that switch to the arts administration thing, which again, when I got to that program, I went to a program at NYU for performing arts administration, and it was a fantastic program. And I learned a hell of a lot about being a performing arts administrator, but still, there just felt like some gap there of what I was really trying to accomplish. And so marketing got closer because I started to recognize that this language and the way that we're introducing the arts is broken. You know, if I see one more classical sign with a symphony orchestra performance and it's a picture of a conductor, I'm going to lose my shit. Because honestly, like, that tells you nothing about the performance. That unless you know specifically who that is, how are you going to be drawn into that sort of performance? So I started thinking, okay, we can get creative with language and imagery and things of that nature. And like I said, then it just evolved from there with the leadership training to know it's the language. It's always been about the language. It's been about expression and communication and authenticity, something that I was just using music and marketing to hide behind for the longest time. And I think we all do that. I think we all hide behind experiences in our lives that, you know, now we feel like we have to show up in a certain way at work. We feel like we have to say a certain thing to our spouses and our children because there's some stigma about the way we have to behave in a certain situation. But that's not necessarily true. You know, there's boundaries, of course, but we don't have to always be who we're told to be. We can just be who we are and act accordingly, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, no, I completely get it. I, you know, in just analyzing my own relationships prior to, I definitely could have used a little bit more determination that you had in terms of finding, you know, your true authentic self and your voice. And I find that we all get into that people pleasing mode, and you know, we fall out of who we really are. And, you know, so I guess the reason why I asked you if there was something that happened, and it sounds like, you know, there was some failure in there. And, you know, so like, what kept pushing you through that failure? Like, obviously some people give up and then, you know, but you have such determination. Like, what kept you going?
Yeah, I don't know, honestly, because I wanted to quit and I wanted to just go the easy route for the longest time. I wanted to make my parents happy and not waste their money because I was fortunate enough they paid for my college experience. So I was, there was the guilt there of, okay, just keep trucking along this line. And it was just an emptiness that I was just yearning to fill. And I knew I wasn't happy and I just kept trying different things despite again, my parents sort of in my ear saying like, well, why don't you just do this? Why don't you just do that? Why don't you just get a job and get security? And just knowing that not only did they not understand the industry that I was in and sort of having to fly on my own because I didn't know anybody to really mentor me, but just knowing that something was missing and I wasn't happy to be content. I wanted to be happy. And that was something just so inherently missing. And I couldn't necessarily articulate it at the time, but I knew that there was something very, very wrong. And I wouldn't stop until something started to make more sense. And in certain situations, I'd be happy for a short period of time. It would quickly go away. And I'm like, all right, well, and I'd get hard on myself. Honestly, I'd probably have gotten to this point quicker had I not been so hard on myself along the way, because failure is inevitable and we get to embrace failure because we learn things from it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was just chasing that void and knowing that there had to be something there. There had to be something that could fulfill what I was looking for, because I grew up in a family where security was very important. It was less about doing things that made you happy so much as doing things that you were skilled at, having a great work ethic, and really dedicating yourself to them, but not necessarily things that fulfilled you. Like, that wasn't how I was, you know, brought up at all. And yet I had this calling inside me all of my life to do things that made me happy, and I didn't care necessarily about the security that came with it. I would do my best to create that security to make them feel better, but ultimately I knew I didn't want to follow that same line of just settle for what's safe. I knew that wasn't what I wanted. And I just kept chasing and chasing and changing and shifting and, you know, zigzagging until finally I found something that truly, truly made sense, and it stuck. That was the other important thing, is that it actually stuck longer than a week of the initial excitement and then the adrenaline, you know.
Yeah. That's awesome. So did you always communicate well with, like, your family or your parents specifically?
No. See, the fun part is my family is still the one, like, sector of people that I really struggle with communicating. And I think it's because there's that dynamic of being a kid in a family and then finally growing up as an adult, that dynamic changes so significantly, but they don't necessarily see that change. They still see you as their little kid. And I have an older brother, you know, same sort of dynamic where I'm always going to be his little sister no matter what. And especially since they don't understand my journey of doing things that I'm excited about, doing things I'm passionate about, versus doing the safe thing, which they've kind of done, which it works for them, and they're happy to have nicer things and go on vacations, and that's great, but that's just not me. And so it still can be very much a struggle, but what I have developed is a lot of confidence in being able to tell them, putting my foot down, basically letting them know, like, nope, this is really how it's going to work for me. And if you don't understand that, that's fine. But for now, like, this is the way that I'm going. This is the way that I believe is best for me. And you just have to trust me. Like, you've seen me go all over the place my whole life. When have I not actually landed on my feet? And reminding them of that I have never actually failed enough that I've put myself in any sort of danger. You know, I've never been homeless. I've never, you know, had to go without groceries because I couldn't afford rent otherwise, anything like that. So just reminding them that they get to trust me as an adult, as a person, as somebody who can take care of themselves. But when it comes to other people in my life, I do find that I have a really good balance of being who I am and then respecting who they are in return. And sometimes you get along as a result of that. Sometimes you don't. But my relationships are very, very different now than they used to be since making that shift and really allowing myself to be myself in a way that's authentic but respectful of other people. You know, I think people sometimes misconstrue authenticity for allowing yourself to be an asshole when you feel like it. That's not necessarily the case.
Yeah.
I'm from New Jersey, so generally that's kind of how New Jersey people function, is that very abrasive sort of personality. But yeah, there's a delicate balance of respecting who you are and who somebody else is in a conversation. And I feel like I'm still human, of course, I'm not perfect at it, but I feel like I've really gotten a great grasp of doing that in an everyday situation, in no matter what context I'm in.
Yeah, and, you know, that's awesome, because for me, it was always a struggle just communicating with my parents, the language barrier, on top of the language barrier, but just you brought in a great point, just them always viewing you as a kid, and then, but you're an adult now, and there's a transition there, and it's hard for them to kind of, like, swallow that. So, but I get the whole boundary thing, and I want to just touch upon the boundaries. You know, so, like, how does that work in, you know, in your romantic relationships? Like, how can you, you know, express those boundaries without, the other kind of getting, you know, upset at you or not agreeing with you?
Yeah. Well, you know what? I think that's the first thing you get to let go of, is realizing that they're a person too, and they have their own set of core values and things that are important to them and ways that they think things happen. And you're not always going to agree. The important thing is being able to have a healthy conversation about those things anyway. Like, that the conversation that, where there's points that are disagreeing, doesn't have to be a very argumentative and aggressive conversation. It can simply be a statement of facts, like, well, this is important to me. Well, actually, this is important to me. Huh, interesting. And then trying to come from it with curiosity into understanding the other person better. Because, of course, men and women are very, very different. They function differently. I know in my own romantic relationships, I've in the past really struggled to articulate what it is I want. And so as a result, what I wind up doing is overcompensating in a way of trying to set the example of, I want other people to treat you. Mm-hmm. And so I would be doing the things for somebody that I would hope they would do for me, but because I wasn't articulating that that's why I was doing that, or that those were things that I wanted, it fell on deaf ears. So I started to feel unappreciated. I started to feel taken advantage of, because I rarely even get a thank you. And the reality is that those things don't necessarily mean something to him on the other side of our relationship. Mm-hmm. To him, that's just something I'm doing. That's just who I am. That's not necessarily the way he hears that I love him. It's not necessarily the way he hears that I care. And so that miscommunication of me not saying, hey, I would love if you wrote romantic notes on the mirror every once in a while. I would love if you would, buy me flowers for no reason someday. If I didn't articulate that, how is he going to know? Because people have those different needs, different love languages. That's a whole other conversation. But if you're open about it, then you know where the other person's coming from.
Yeah, and just being honest with them, I guess.
Honest.
Just being completely honest with them. I did have a hard time, just like you, articulating what it is that I wanted, but I would just show it and assume that this person is going to understand, everything that's going on inside of my mind. And yeah, they would never get it. And it would just eat me away, and I completely get it. So when there was a breakdown of communication, what's the best way of kind of reintegrating back into a healthy form of communication? If there was a breakdown, as in yelling, screaming, name calling, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, of course, it's best to avoid that initially if possible. But in the event that it does happen, and trying to get back to a place of neutral is really the most important part. So I find in my romantic relationships, what I wind up doing is coming back to the situation, and it's nerve-wracking. I am not saying that being neutral feels neutral. It is still emotionally charged. But I can come back to my romantic relationship and I can say, hey, listen, this happened the other day and this is how I felt about it. And because of that, I'm really trying to think of a specific example that would be like a really good way to understand better.
Let's just say that.
I don't know. Maybe I'll think one in a minute. Yeah. We'll come back to that.
Okay.
But so coming back to the conversation and really sitting them down, being fully present, not having the TV on in the background sort of thing, and just saying to them, this is how I felt when this happened the other day. And this is the assumption that I made about you because of that conversation. And for that, I'm sorry, because that was a wrong assumption. And I want to move past this with you. I want to know that these conversations don't have to come up in the future. And if that they do, if it is something that's important enough that they are recurring, that there's ways we can work through them in a healthy way. How do you feel about the conversation that happened the other day? What was your reflection from it? How are you feeling about it? And really prompting the other person to give their honest opinion. Again, not being a judgmental thing, not saying like, well, you were an asshole and you cursed at me and you did this. It's not about that. It's about saying, I felt this as a result of this all happening. And here is the assumption that I made because of the way it went down. And because that's really what it is. You're basically taking responsibility for your part in the conversation, because that's all we can do. Again, the rest is assumptions and us projecting behavior on somebody else. I know one of the biggest issues that I have with relationships in general, I can't even say it's just romantic relationships, but relationships in general, I struggle with, if somebody doesn't do what I would do in their shoes, I take that as disrespect. So for example, if I say that I'm going to call somebody at a certain time, or I say that I'm committed to helping somebody with something this coming Saturday, and they don't do it, or they fall off the face of the earth and I don't hear from them, I would never do that in somebody's situation. That's, to me, that's very disrespectful of somebody's time, of somebody's effort, of being a support to somebody in a certain situation. So my natural sort of assumption is, oh, they don't respect me. They don't care enough about me. But the reality is I have no idea why they never called. I have no idea where they went. For all I know, they were in a terrible car accident, or they didn't put the calendar notification in their thing when we were talking about it, and they just, you know, they had a brain fart. Sometimes it happens. But for my immediate reaction to go to the defensive and say, to basically judge them for not being at a standard that I hold myself is unfair. And I think that's something we very, very commonly do in romantic relationships, is hold somebody to a standard that we've created for ourselves, but they're working on a completely different set of standards and rules and core values than we even know. No matter how long you're in a relationship with somebody, you're still always going to find out some new sort of rule that they live by that you never knew about, and that dictates their behavior. And it's all because of how they've lived their life and the experiences that they've had. So to make those assumptions is really, really dangerous. We get to take that as much out of the conversation as possible.
Mm-hmm. So what I'm getting is, like, you know, just basically just state your feelings, you know, tell them how you
felt,
how you contributed to it. But like, how important is, like, well, you mentioned before a little bit about just being curious, just asking questions, right? Like, how important is that? I mean, that's literally, you're going to unravel all of those, you know, assumptions that you made, and you can get some clarity if you just get curious and just ask them questions, like, so what did you mean by that? Or, you know, how did you feel by that? Or, you know, what was the context? Or, like, did you mean this? Or, and just being, and asking the right questions about, you know, trying to get to the bottom of whatever it is that you're struggling with, right, too. I mean, whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever thing. So I mean, no, that's great, and I'm thankful for you to share that with us. You know, I know that we get a little bit vulnerable here in terms of stuff, but I guess, like, because this is a divorce show, my next question for you is: have you ever had any experiences with divorce, or like, has anything been brought to your attention in this arena, and then you've kind of like?
Not directly, but I've seen many friends of mine go through divorce or be a product of a family with a nasty divorce, or I've seen plenty of them. I have to say I don't have any direct experience with it.
Okay, and how did that affect you? Like, how is it, how, was there anything that really stood out to you?
So much of it is from a lack of communication and expectations that were never met, and as a result, end so hostily.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, again, another reason that I just value so much this communication in my relationships, and make sure that that's something that's really, really strong, whether it be friendships, family, romantic relationships, what have you, because that's a muscle that you practice with. And if you're practicing that with everybody else in your life, when it happens in your marriage or through the case of a divorce, you're going to be that much stronger and more comfortable in being neutral and taking that strong emotional aspect out of it to be able to do, especially if there's kids involved. You know, you want to keep it as neutral as possible so that you're doing what's best for your child or for your children. And those high emotions is just incredibly difficult to have a logical and cordial conversation if some of that gets in there. So taking the personal defensive out of it. You can come at it from curiosity instead of from a place of judgment. You cannot be curious and judgmental at the same time. So if you're curious about, you know, how is this going to work now that we're divorced and we're separating our lives? How are we going to be able to undo our mortgage and separate our living situation? How are we going to be able to take care of our children? And what does that situation look like? It has to be from a curious standpoint of, let's fix this puzzle, instead of, you know, I'm really mad at you and I'm going to be vindictive and hold a grudge and really just hope that I get my way. It's not about that. Even if there's no children involved, it's never about that. It's about doing what's going to be the most painless. And of course, it's not going to be painless because divorce and relationships ending are painful, but to be curious how you can make this work in a way that serves everybody is really going to be more supportive than coming at it with those angry and emotionally charged sort of thoughts and feelings about it.
Yeah, I completely agree. I love how you said you can't be curious and judgmental at the same time. Like, that is so true. And if you're coming from a place of open-mindedness, yes, you cannot be
coming from a place of closed-mindedness, and it's absolutely true. And but I mean, just gonna ask you, when, let's just say there was a guy, you know, sitting there and he can't communicate, like he's willing to communicate, but the other party isn't just willing to communicate. Do you just throw your hands up in the air, or like, do you try to like exhaust all your options, like emails or, you know, what have you? Like,
I certainly would recommend going the route of email, so it allows somebody the opportunity to censor themselves before something comes out that they didn't necessarily want to come out, and that can be, you know, taken back. But I mean, in a case where it's really one-sided and where somebody's not willing to meet you halfway in terms of that, just civility, then yeah, I mean, there is a point where you kind of have to throw your hands up a little bit, but we still always get to be the bigger person, because ultimately they're going to be the miserable ones. We don't have to be miserable. As long as we know we're doing the right thing, we're doing the respectful thing, we're doing the honest thing, that's all we can do. And the second we stoop to their level, it's just going to make things hard again. And if that means cutting somebody out of your life entirely, unfortunately, sometimes that means that. But you know that at that point, then you've done everything you can to do what's best for you and to attempt to do what's also going to work for them. You can't force somebody to behave a certain way. You can't force them to want something that is a cordial conversation if they would rather be angry and hold grudges. You just can't force that. But you can try and reason with them and tell them that this is something that's important to you. This is something that you feel would be really beneficial for both of you, to make sure that your lives separating is as easy as possible and doesn't have to be a long, drawn-out, painful process. And sometimes people don't hear that, and that's okay, but you still get to be the bigger person ultimately. You wanna be angry and upset in the privacy of your own home and, you know, with the guys when you go out for a drink afterward. That's one thing. But in terms of the conversation itself, it's too difficult and causes too many more problems to not be the bigger person.
This is all such great advice. Like, really, really intriguing. Like, such great advice. I think the biggest thing I took away, you know, from that was just being the bigger person after the person is not willing to communicate with you. Cause all too often, you know, I actually got into, you know, just going, touching back upon when you said that you would get angry or upset when someone, didn't do something that you would probably do in their shoes. And I would always respond to people if they were to ever communicate to me in any shape or form, I would never turn it away. And so when somebody does that to me, it's like a complete disrespect, and like I completely get it. But what happened to me after that is I would just stoop to their level and I would blow up. And I think back and I'm like, how many relationships could I have saved, or how many relationships could I have consciously not been so, like, you know, guilty of breaking, you know, or ruining at the end of it, had I just been that bigger person, right? It's just crazy eye-opener for me too when you said that. And I'm sure there's a lot of guys in the group here listening that, you know, can take that and say, you know what, you're right, I'm not going to stoop to that level. I'm not. I'm going to allow myself to
really. Yeah. Well, and what's interesting about your particular audience of being mostly divorced dads is, I think a lot of the assumption is, oh, well, men and women are so different, and that's why this is so hard. Well, I don't think it's because of that. I think it's because, again, of this core value system that we all seem to have. I think that's why we don't mesh well with certain people, whether or not it's a romantic relationship, is just because of that reactionary evolution that we've created for ourselves of, in this situation, this is how I behave. And, oh, this person didn't act that way in that situation? Well, that must mean that A, B, or C. I mean, we really do create our own rules and values and morals that we live by, and everybody's just so different of what that looks like. I mean, I've been binge watching Dexter recently. Think of Dexter, if you've watched Dexter, and the code that he lives by. Harry's code. He's a serial killer. Most people would not see the value and the sort of mercy that he has as a serial killer, and yet he has this whole moral code that he goes by. You know, he has this entire set of rules that he lives his life by. it's not always that extreme in regular everyday lives, but we do. We all have that same sort of code. You know, I have the Gina code. You have the Rob code. Like, we'd all just have our own sets of rules. And if we remember that that's really the conversation or the lack of conversation that's happening, then that's what really can pique the curiosity. Like, okay, where is that coming from for you? So actually, I do have a great example of this. So in my current romantic relationship, he is very different from me in a lot of ways. He's far more introverted, likes to spend time at home, doesn't really like to go out with people so much. And toward the beginning of our relationship, I started to get upset about that. I thought to myself, if we don't go out in public, I haven't met any of his friends, like maybe he's ashamed of being out in public with me. I don't know what it was. So I brought it up to him one night, like, we don't seem to go anywhere. We don't seem to do anything. And he was able to articulate to me that he doesn't have a lot of free time for himself. So the free time that he does have, he chooses to spend with me. And it's also because the free time he has, he's also exhausted. And so he doesn't really want to do all that much. And so the way that he shows he cares and that I'm important to him and that I matter to him is the fact that he does choose what little free time he has to spend with me. And I have never complained about not going out with him again. Most of our time is honestly spent on the couch just watching TV because it's both of our downtime. Now I know that, you know what, I get to do as much as I can outside of our time together because I'm a busy person too. And then our time together is not only our downtime, but it's also our bonding time as a result. But had he not told me specifically, like, this is what me spending time with you looks like and means, I wouldn't know that. And I would sit there and get resentful and make all these assumptions about, oh, he's ashamed of me. Oh, he doesn't want to spend money on me. Oh, this or that. And it's not what that was about at all. But because we were able to have that conversation early on, it's never been a problem since. And how many times do situations like that happen in our relationships, again, of any kind, romantic or otherwise, and we just make the assumption and harbor the guilt, and it just turns into this huge story in our head that's not even real. But it doesn't have to.
I love it. And you're just getting curious and asking him, like, what was it? You know, instead of assuming and then getting upset, which I know a lot of people will probably internalize and do instead of actually, you know, because they're afraid of a little bit of confrontation. They think it's unhealthy or what have you. But I think it's just great. It's great to really just set the tone right then and there and just end all those thoughts in your head, right? I mean, but that's great. I love
yeah,
that. That
it's a relief for me. It was a relief for me. And I can't honestly say that it wasn't, I was hurt at that time by the time I asked. I had been harboring it for a little bit, but I knew well enough to say something sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
Instead, again, just presenting it to him in a way of like, hey, like, why is this happening? Like, is everything okay? And he was able to respond in kind because I wasn't overly emotional about it either, because the longer we hold on to it, of course, the more pent up emotion we have about it. And that was the difference. That was why now our relationship in that aspect is completely fine, because we were able to talk about it before it truly became a problem.
Awesome. Awesome. This is such great advice, honestly. Like, there's so many golden nuggets wrapped up in there. Okay, but I do want to take you to a part of the show and get to know you a little bit better. I'm going to ask you some random questions here.
Yay!
And yeah. And then so my audience gets to know you a little bit too. But I think they're fun questions. I think it really does open up, and you know, you're an artistic being, so I'm sure you can catch on. So
sure.
all right. So if you could be any animal in the world, what animal would you be and why?
Oh, I've been asked this question so many times and I never know how to answer it. I think I would be a tiger, simply because there's something about me that's really powerful and intimidating, but at the same time, I'm just a big pussycat and kind of cuddly and just, you know, I just am what I am. I'm saying that specifically with like Aladdin in mind, like that cartoon tiger,
yeah.
Which I realize is not real, but that's sort of where my brain's going, yeah.
Awesome. Okay, what is your favorite book, or is there something that you're reading right now that you'd like to share with us?
I'm always reading something, but actually one of my favorite books, and this is going to sound super morbid, is Columbine by Dave Cullen. On the 10th anniversary of the Columbine massacre, mm-hmm. This guy who had been following the evidence and all the investigation after the fact released a book with 10 years worth of research from that day up till the release of that book. And it was just so fascinating to me to see how much they learned about these kids in hindsight, how much detail they were able to get into about what happened that day, and just about their, like, the one was certainly a psychopath, and going into some of the psychology behind being a psychopath and what that looks like. And for whatever reason, it's just so fascinating to me to study other people that I can't even remotely relate to. Like, I'm nothing like those people. So to learn about them is really, really fascinating to me.
Yeah.
It's not that time reading, but it was a very, very...
That's awesome. I think you and me are kind of similar in that sense. Like, I've watched Dexter religiously before. I even watched it twice. And, I love true crime. I love just getting into the minds of other people that I can't understand for myself. And yeah, I'm just like you.
Yeah.
I'm going to definitely read that one, Columbine. That's crazy. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
If you could hop on a plane right now, and go anywhere in the world, where would you go and why?
Oh, I would go to Iceland. I've never been to Iceland, and I've always wanted to see the Aurora Borealis.
Mm, yeah, I've seen pictures. It's so gorgeous. It's so
stunning.
Gorgeous.
Yes.
And it's almost unreal. Like, it looks fake.
Yeah, I know.
And
it's fantastic. And I love the cold, so I'm all about it.
Nice. My friend, I just saw his Facebook picture. He was on, he's in Iceland right now. In Reykjavik or something? Something like that. I don't know. Anyways. It's the city over there. But yeah, anyways, that's a good choice. It's actually pretty cheap to go there, so. It's actually a good choice. Do you have any weird eating habits?
I actually had an eating disorder several years ago, so I have lots of weird eating habits. that's something that you really screws with your relationship with food. But the weirdest habit I have, nobody taught me when I was younger not to eat the shrimp tails, so I eat the shrimp tails. I know that's really weird, but like somebody pointed out I do that one day, and I didn't realize that it wasn't something you're supposed to do, and it's been sort of an inside joke that I eat shrimp tails.
That's so funny. I'm going to order a shrimp cocktail and make sure that all the tails are off. And
I don't know. They're crunchy. I like the crunchiness of it
I get it.
There's this
Chinese food dish where the shells are actually cooked on, and I would eat the shells with the shrimp on it. So, yeah, you're not alone. I mean, I've done it before, so you're not alone. I do like it. It's a little bit crispy. It's a little bit of texture element to it. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Awesome. Okay. If you had to meet someone who is dead right now, who would it be and why? And it doesn't have to be a famous person.
Yeah. I think I would want to meet, I don't know. Oh, that's such a good one. I don't know. Oh my god, that's such a hard one for me.
Who's the first
I don't know, Abraham Lincoln's coming to mind for some reason.
Really?
I don't know. I have such a no correlation whatsoever, I realize this, but like I have such a fascination with the American Revolution.
Yeah.
And so like my mind went to George Washington. And I'm like, I don't know, he seems kind of boring. But Abe Lincoln, like I feel like he just was in this really interesting period of change in America and the history of the country that, like, I'm sure he'd have a lot to say.
For sure. Honest Abe, you can ask him anything, and he'd be able
to.
Yeah,
well, yeah, and I mean, from a communication standpoint, of course I'd want to talk to somebody like that.
For sure. Awesome. I like to follow dead presidents as well, too, so that's a good answer. Anyways, okay, so that concludes the random five. So yeah, that was awesome. It got me. Now I know what I'm gonna do when I get to Ohio. I'm gonna bring a whole ring of shrimp cocktail and we can watch Dexter together. So awesome. Okay, that concludes our random five. So thank you for that. It does bring a little bit of a lighthearted moment to our podcast. So I love doing that, and also gets me curious about other things as well too, so I'm sure we can fly down that rabbit hole together one day. And is there any way that people can get a hold of you? Like, where do you like to hang out? Are you offering anything right now in terms of your communication coaching? And how can they get a hold of it?
My website is under construction, but it is GinaMolinari.com. So that's my full name, Gina Molinari. And I'm on Instagram as GinaMo13. I am on Facebook as GinaMoTVC. That's for the voice coach. And I'm working on creating what I'm calling the Michelangelo method. And it's a 6-month program into really stepping into your authentic voice, being able to craft your story with confidence, being able to really conquer some of those fears around speaking, whether it be public speaking or just getting your pitch out or connecting deeper with other people. So I have a 6-month program that I'm rolling out for that I'm calling the Michelangelo method, because the way he sculpted his sculptures, he would say he would see the sculpture in the marble before he even touched it. And then it was just a matter of releasing what he saw. And that's what I believe we do with our voices. We just cover them up with all these experiences in society and fears and failures. And ultimately, we wind up covering up the real version of ourselves. And we just get to chip away all of that and just step out into who we truly are again.
That's awesome.
So that's what that's going on.
Awesome. Yeah, we're definitely going to keep in touch with that. For sure, when that comes out, I'm going to follow up with you on that and check in and see if, you know, that'll be something we can work on together in the background. I know for me, I'm trying to become a better public speaker and so on and so forth, so we'll definitely keep in touch with that. So cool.
Yeah,
so I'll put all the links in the show notes for everybody to get a hold of you, and then you can maybe connect with Gina and ask her whatever questions that you have in regards to that. So, but I do want to thank you for coming on the show. I really do appreciate you taking out your time, and I know you have some other events going on, so I'm glad you sprinkled me inside of that. So thank you for that. And yeah, I know you're on just a great path, and I know you're headed for amazing things and just greatness, and so I'm gonna wish you all the best, and I'm definitely gonna be following along and cheering you on. So
thank you, I appreciate that.
Thank you. And so to conclude our podcast, I do ask one question at the end of all of our episodes. If there was a divorced dad listening in and you go through a hard time, what is that one piece of advice that you could give to him?
Your feelings matter. You don't have to be a man and bottle them up or act a certain way. What you feel is what you feel, and you should honor it.
Boom. Just dropping knowledge everywhere. Gina Mo, go find her on Instagram, Facebook. Go connect with her on social media. Let her know what you thought of this episode, as well as share it out with your friends. And I like to hang out on Instagram, so come follow me, guys, and make sure you guys continue the conversation there. All right, Rob, your host, signing off. Peace out.